Hello and welcome to another episode of Nothing Ventured with me, Ari Shah. Today, via Zoom, I have with me Cynthia Mano. Cynthia is the CEO of Core Angels, a global brand of hands-on angels investing in early stage startups through local portfolio funds. Cynthia has a rich background in computer science, corporate strategy, and early stage investing. Her passion for mentoring and supporting early stage companies led her to join a group of angel investors, eventually investing in 27 startups. Recognizing patterns and opportunities, she decided to create her own network and was soon invited to lead Core Angels, one of the most active angel networks in Europe, where under her leadership, it has grown to encompass 11 angel funds, which plans to launch 5 more this year across various countries, including Portugal, Spain, Italy, Switzerland, Egypt, the US, and Chile. The network focuses on pre-seed and seed investments and includes vertical funds such as the Climate Tech Fund in Italy. Cynthia's efforts are directed towards formalizing angel funds, fostering best practices, and providing valuable learning experiences for angel investors. In today's episode, we talk about building angel funds to bring capital and investors together. Sometimes it's hard for an angel to make a decision on their own, how investing across geographies and verticals facilitates expansion and cross-pollination amongst both angels as well as startups, building 11 angel funds across 8 different geographies with angels from 20 different countries, and why we shouldn't need more female angels to invest in more female founders, and that female founders does not only equal femtech, how you shouldn't wait till you feel like you're completely prepared before you write your first check, putting your money to work is the best way to learn, and that angel investing is a game of patience. Her contrarian opinion is that we are always alone and need to build ourselves before we rely on anyone else. Let's get straight into it. This is Nothing Ventured with me, Ari Shah, the podcast where I talk to the people behind the stories that make the venture capital ecosystem go round. I've been working with startups from pre-seed to Series C for the last decade, and companies that I've worked with have gone on to realize value and exit or raise funds in excess of $500 million. I really hope you enjoy the episode, and if you have a guest that you'd love to see me have on, or you have a comment on any of the episodes that I've recorded so far, do reach out to me on LinkedIn or Twitter. I'd love to hear from you. Let's get straight into it. Cynthia, it's great to have you here with me via Zoom. I think there's a lot to unpack. We're going to talk about a bunch of stuff that is sort of related to kind of the work you're doing with angels and the startups that you guys invest in. But you've played a pivotal role in bringing together and formalizing angel funds through Core Angels. So can you explain to me what the benefits of this approach are and how it's impacted the startups and angel investors that are involved?
Okay, yes, absolutely. So our model, our approach to angel investing is bringing angels together to invest in the same portfolio of startups. So that's what we call the angel funds. Mm-hmm. So you can think of it as a mix between a typical VC fund, the VC fund structure. You have managers, you have an institution that is collecting money and then investing in the startups. But differently from a VC fund, in an angel fund, the angels are the one making the decisions. The owners of the money are the ones deciding where to invest, where to allocate the capital. And not only on the decision process, but also after the investment is made, they are actively participating in the life of the startup as much as they want to support the founders in their challenges. So basically building this portfolio together gives the angels the opportunity to learn not only from the founders and the startups, but also from other angels that are coming with different backgrounds, diverse experience, networking. So it's a very rich process of working together as a community, evaluating the startups. And then once we decide that it's a good opportunity to invest in, we are also together trying to support them in their challenges.
So, I mean, talk me through what the typical kind of journey for an angel investor. So are we talking, you know, the angels that come into these sort of angel funds via Core Angels, are they typically first time angels? Like they, you know, they have just started on their journey to angel invest, or are they more seasoned? Because, you know, I guess a lot of angels that I know participate in syndicates, but, you know, they are also angel investing sort of off their own, you know, in their own right individually. So yeah. Is it more for that kind of educational and collaborative approach that people come in or like to learn from other angels, or is it because that they believe collectively the value that they can add is greater than if they did it individually, even if they are quite seasoned angels? How does that break down?
Yeah, great question. In fact, in Core Angels, we see half and half almost. Like, we have many people that come to us because they think, as I thought when I started investing as an angel, that, well, I'm really interested in doing this, but it's a lot of things to learn. You know, there is a long learning curve ahead of me about topics that I'm not sure if I will have time or interest to learn about everything, like legal things, term sheet clauses, or implications for myself as an individual of investing, this sort of thing. So the first time angels, they look at our model and say, well, you know, this is interesting because this will solve some of the issues that I might have investing individually. One of the issues is accessing good deal flow. Mm. And for this problem, the syndicates, they are a good solution because you go there, you watch some pitches, you always receive new startups to analyze. Good. But in the model of syndicates, then deciding if you're going to invest or not, and even making the investment, is almost an individual process. So you write a check, you can go together with some of the angels, but then it's only up to you. While in our model, you have the fund managers who are the fund leaders that we call, who are taking care of all this paperwork, negotiations. We have a lot of opportunity also that comes with other co-investors. So in our funds, differently, as you have a fund, we have many partnerships established with other angels or with VC funds. So we have the opportunity to participate in this other round. And after the investment, you still have this opportunity to continue learning. So it's not only about the first part of learning, but also afterwards, really experiencing and living the life of the startup together with other angels. In the other hand, we also have some people that have experience in investing in startups, but they had a poor experience doing this by their own, because they tried to do that. They could find good deals. They could go to many events. They could select some startups, but they were doing this all by their own. And you spend a lot of time in these things. You also need to, it's hard because it's hard for you to be alone, taking all the decisions or making all the decisions and learning by yourself. So these people that had already invested, or sometimes also what happens, I've talked to some angels that they were kind of unhappy with the experience of being an angel because they thought, well, you know, I invested in that company. And then before I invested, I was getting reports every month about what they were doing, what are the updates, etc. But then after we got married, you know, things were not like the same anymore. So they kind of disappear. I don't hear about them. I don't know exactly if I could help or contribute somehow or not. So they are a little unsatisfied with the experience, and they come to our groups, our funds, because they see that, well, we have a company there, you know, we have established relationship with the startups that is different. It's much stronger than it is as an individual. I have much more power to be aware of what's going on. So the relationship is really different. So even experienced angels come to our model because of this convenience, and also because of the chance of having a better experience with the founders.
Yeah, so I guess there's a couple of things, like the pooled capital effect, right? So you have more capital, so you're a larger force on the cap table, which means you can influence more, I guess, is the point there. But the question I wanted to ask you, though, is, because you talk about them as angel funds, but are they closed funds in that sense, or do angels get the opportunity to participate on a deal by deal basis, or are they committing all their capital up front? How does that work? Because, you know, there are a ton of models out there, and I'd be really interested to see how you guys have solved that.
Okay. Yes. So different. It's different from a typical VC fund. We don't fundraise everything up front. Okay. usually we start a fund and we have a program, an acceleration program that we designed it to help angel investors that wanted to launch their funds with us. And once they are doing this, we plan all of this. So they start the fund, they launch the fund with capital to invest in 3-4 startups. Okay. So it's a rolling fund. Angels can enter along the way. Usually they set up a time for fundraising of 3 years, fundraising and investing. And then they stop fundraising. And then they just take care of the babies. Mm-hmm. So they just take care of the startups and try to support the founders in the next rounds and identify good opportunities of exits and work on those opportunities. So usually when they launch, they already could get angels to fund 3 or 4 startups. And then usually what happens is that the first angels of the group, they come because they have a relationship with the leaders. They have been investing together before. They are colleagues or they are friends. Then the second wave of angels is friends of friends. You start saying, well, you know, I'm being part of taking part in this group that is very interesting. Then a friend gets interested, come to participate in one of the committees, likes and comes. And then in the third wave, sometimes we have like external people. So people that, oh, I hear about Core Angels. I like the model. I see that you have one of your funds in my country. I would like to know more about. I would like to participate. What is the application process? How does it work, et cetera? So usually it's like this.
I mean, so we're going to talk about this in a second, but is there cross-pollination amongst the funds? I mean, do angels get to, so if I've joined Core Angels Lisbon, for argument's sake, can I then invest in Core Angels Italy? Or how does that work?
Okay, yes. Today we have some angels that they are investors in more than one fund. Uh-huh. Okay, it happens. Like we have angels that are invested in Core Angels Climate, which is our vertical for climate startups in Europe. But they are also invested in Core Angels Lisbon. Mm. That is a geographic fund. So industry agnostic, but based in the Lisbon ecosystem. Mm. And this way they are exposed to the both portfolios, okay? But there is another thing that we are working on that is making sure we are right now launching a platform for funding, for managing the funds that will allow angels to participate not only in a new fund, in the whole portfolio, but also to participate in a special deal of one portfolio. So suppose that I'm in Core Angels Lisbon. And I don't want to invest in the whole portfolio of Core Angels Climate, but I want to know what are the startups being analyzed and what are the startups that I will be pitching in the committees, because I want to evaluate them and possibly invest only in that startup. So have a syndicate layer on top of the portfolios. This is something that our angels have been asking us for this possibility, and we are working to make it real for the fourth quarter of this year.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that makes a lot of sense. So kind of taking that bit further, you do operate funds across various countries and you've introduced vertical funds as well. And you mentioned the Climate Tech Fund in Italy as an example of that. So how do those geographic and thematic focuses enhance that overall investment strategy and support for startups within the network?
Okay. Yes. So we have the funds, they are very independent. And they have their own investment theses. Some, it means that some of them, they are investing in really, really early stage, like pre-seed. Others, they prefer not to take pre-seed, but to take some part in pre-series A or seed stages. And this is okay. What happens is that as we have funds in different countries and with angels with different expertise, what we do is we can support founders, the startups of our portfolio, in their expansion to other markets, for example. This is just an example. So we had, I'll get an example. We had a very interesting startup invested by Pacific, Core Angels Pacific, based in Chile. And they were expanding really well, and they were willing to approach the Brazilian market, because it's a huge market for them. It's really close, but they didn't have any clue about what to do. So how could I approach this market? So we did like a task force, and we bring together the leaders of our funds from Brazil. it doesn't matter the industry, but just to get the founders some overview about how that industry is performing in Brazilian market, or some cultural aspects of Brazilian market, what they should be careful about, what are the strategies that would work or not work. So this is the kind of thing that sometimes we do in a very organic and not so structured way right now. But we have this possibility, and we will explore this possibility of having like cross mentorship between angels and founders from different funds. Suppose that, and we have this a lot, like suppose that in Corinthians Lisbon, we have people from different nationalities. They are coming, they are living in Lisbon, but they come from Netherlands, they come from Germany, they come from different places. So if a startup of that group wants to expand their markets to that countries, they should count and rely on the experience of those angels. And we could do that not only for the portfolio that the angel is investing, but also for the whole portfolio of the network. So this is a potential that we have already identified. We are still working very manually on this, but we'll be launching some way of structuring this kind of support, international mentorship for our founders.
Yeah, I mean, it makes a huge amount of sense. It's that sort of facilitation of cross-collaboration, cross-pollination, you know, whether that's expansion, whether that's just understanding kind of legalities or operating environment of, you know, between countries, and also just giving advice like, okay, maybe you want to consider entering this, like they may not have even been on the roadmap, but maybe consider doing X, Y, or Z. Or, I mean, I guess left field, like, you know, you may have a business within the climate tech fund, which actually has applications outside of climate, which another angel may see because of their own industry background or whatever. And that may lead to, you know, additional kind of feature launches and so on. And remind me, I mean, in how many countries are you currently operating in as core angels?
Yeah, so right now we are 11 angel funds, and these funds, they are based in 8 different countries, okay? So they are incorporated in 8 different countries, but our angels, they come from 20 different countries. So this is the figures right now.
Got it. And I guess moving on from kind of the core angels fund, as it were, and talking about yourself a little bit. So as someone who's been, you know, a leader in the angel investing space as a woman, what trends have you observed regarding female participation, both as angels as well as startup founders? And how is Core Angels kind of trying to foster that diversity, that inclusion within its network?
Okay. Well, yes. You see, we have few female investors in the market. You know, the numbers are really low in terms of participation of female angels in the total of angels. In Core Angels, 15% of our angels are female angels, which is good compared to the average of the market. But for me personally, this is really low.
Yeah.
So this is something that I would love to bring more female angels. We have been doing some activities to foster this. And I recognize also that we see many women that are amazing angels, but when we talk to them, they say things like, oh, I wish I could have started earlier. And I didn't, because I didn't even know that this was a possibility. Sure. I didn't even know that this activity existed. You know, I was not exposed to it, or I just learned about it by accident, or someone brought me to a meeting. I didn't know exactly what it was. And when I got there, I was fascinated. And I thought, oh my God, I can do that. But it takes some time to women to be exposed to this for many different reasons. And even when they know about the activity, they don't see this as something that they could do. Mm. And there is a reason for that. So usually we want to feel prepared to embrace challenges. And it's different from men behavior in a very, I'm being very generalistic here. I'm being, you know,
oh,
I
you
know that
don't, I've had this, have... I've had this conversation many times. Women will be much more reluctant to do something that they have not done before. And, you know, there's a bit of imposter syndrome, whereas men typically will just jump straight in whether they know it or not. Yeah.
And it's very simple. It's just something that, usually women, they tend to think, well, but who am I to be there giving advice to founders And, okay, I kind of know something about this industry, but isn't it too much to, to be put myself in this position? And men, they don't even think twice about it, They feel like, of course, I can say something. Of course, they feel much more empowered to do this, and they have no second thoughts about it. It's really amazing to see the difference, from. I don't think that one is better than the other, but I think that both could learn to be in more in the middle, I think that it's good to learn from each other's perspective in this matter. So what we have been doing, we are being so the simple fact that I'm the CEO of Guardian Angels brings some visibility to this theme, and it's very common that many women come to me and say, oh, I see your content that you post, or I've seen you speaking in some event. I'm loving what I'm learning about angel investing, but I don't know what to do. What are the first steps? I wanted to learn more. So the simple fact that we expose more women doing this helps a lot in bringing more women. Okay. And it's not that I am in Shark Tank or I'm wearing a suit, or it's I'm a simple person, I'm a professional that had some years of experience and decided to invest in startups. And it's as simple as that. And how many women are in the same situation that could be investing some part of their capital in startups and supporting the new leaders? So this is one thing. So exposing more, this is a decision that I made for some time. It didn't like very much to write or to participate in events, or I was not so into it. But then I realized that it's important to do that, not because of me, not to tell what I do, but simply to break the myth and say, well, this Cynthia is just a regular person and she's doing that, so I could do that, So this is part of the thing. About female founders, the situation is awful, it's not it, we have been seeing more female founders, it's true, which is good, but still they are not funded, and it makes me really sad to see many times people just denying this or saying things like, oh no, I don't see that there is a difference, because it's clear there is a difference. If you go to any pitch session with female founders, you will see the kind of questions they get, or the kind of space they get, or simply the kind of assumption that especially male investors make just because it's a woman speaking out there. So this situation is still very bad. What I'm trying to do to contribute to this is, of course, I participate in some initiatives of educating more female angels to bring more female angels. But in one hand, I think this is important. But in the other hand, I think like, oh, this is a shame, because we shouldn't need to have more female angels to invest in more female founders, We should just be anyone who wants to be an angel to be, and if men could invest in female founders also. But this is the reality. So we should bring more female founders to, female angels, sorry, to the table. And the other thing that I'm trying to work on also is with the founders. So I've been participating in many programs, acceleration programs, or lecturing in the university with the ladies, saying, look, we have to complain, we have to point these problems, these differences, but this is going to solve the problem of the founders of 10 years from now. This is not solving the problems of the current founders, okay? So for you who are a current founder right now, you need to speak the language. Sorry, this is it. You need to understand that you need to go to a pitch and say, yes, I have this amazing idea, I have this amazing project, and not say, yeah, sorry, yes, it's the way that we position ourselves. So people will not respect you if you just tell something like, yes, I would like you to take a look at this project that I'm writing, if you could give me some feedback, or that's those letters with I don't know how many words explaining everything. So no, don't apologize. Go there, talk about your experience, show your credentials, tell these people why you think you're the best person to run this business. What are the things that you found? How are you going to fix it? And honestly, if they don't listen to you carefully, or even if they don't respect you, just move to the next one.
Sure.
And that's how things should be, you know? Don't waste a lot of time trying to convince people that don't want to listen to you. Just move to the next one, and then you'll find someone that will listen to you and that will feedback, give feedback to you, or that will invest in your business. So this is what I think right now. So instead of just trying to build the long-term future, we have to do both. We have to build a long-term future, but we really need to help the current founders to understand the game, to understand what they should do, what they shouldn't do, how to reply to some questions that are, you know, full of biases, full of prejudice, how to put themselves in a good environment, and be selective about people that they will partner with.
I think all of that is true and correct. I think the sad part of it, you know, to your point, is for a female founder, I guess, you know, if that first person isn't listening, she's got to look for the next person. The problem is that there is just such a smaller pool of people that seem to be willing to invest in female founders. You talked about it, you know, 15% of the core angels are women. And I think, you know, the stats show that there is, you know, an 8 percentage point difference in the number of deals that a woman will do in a female founder versus across the broad spectrum, which obviously then if you look at that, the realistic numbers will probably be that I think the numbers are something like female investors will tend to invest in about 25% of their portfolio will be female founders. And across averages, it's about 17% or 16%. But one would imagine, mm-hmm. actually, if you look at, because obviously that's skewing the number, but if you look at male angels versus female angels, I would assume that men are investing maybe only 10% of their portfolio in female founders. So whilst I agree that yes, the founders of all nations, and I don't think that the problem sits only for female founders. I think there's lots of male founders out there that just do not understand the investment game, if I can put it that way,
exactly.
And how you need to do, you know, present yourselves. But the difference is, to your point, because there are just far more people willing to fund a male founder, he can get from the no to the yes a lot quicker than a female founder can, because there's just fewer out there writing checks for them,
yeah,
right?
So exactly.
I mean, we think we've thought about this topic a lot on this podcast. We've had, you know, female focused funds. We've had a number of female syndicate leaders on the podcast, and I mean, all I think there is to be said is, there is a ton of work yet to be done. You know, we know there are only 2% of, in fact, I was talking to someone only yesterday or the day before, VC, you know, raising a female focused fund. She was telling me that the stats have dropped, right? There's actually less investment going into female founders than there was, you know, even a year or 2 years ago. So, you know, there is such an uphill sort of, struggle battle here, but I think you know, you've got to put in the work and the education, and to some extent, you know, there is an element of just saying, look, you are going to be an underdog. You have to do everything in your power not to look like the underdog, and really kind of push your way through those prejudices and those biases, because you wouldn't have found, like, I mean, the way I always think about it is, you would not have founded this business had you not have had a passion, a dream, you know, an idea that you've executed on. And of course, execution is a critical thing here. You know, you have believed in yourself. You now need to find the others that will believe in you, but that's not going to be helped if you are self-deprecating, if you talk about yourself, as you said earlier, you know, if you are dismissive of what you have achieved, right? You have to be out there and be
exactly
a little bit arrogant, I guess, to play the investment game.
Yes.
Sadly, that is the reality of you know.
Absolutely, and you're right, because it's not only about female, you know, it's about immigrants, it's about Black people, it's about people who are not coming from the top universities. You have many labels that we put in this industry as the role model for the successful founder.
Yeah.
And anyone who doesn't fit in this label, in this box, will suffer this problem. So, and sometimes I think that So I'm always swinging in how I feel about this topic, because sometimes I think that no, we need to make the point and we need to say yes, let's open this fund. We tried to open a fund to invest only in female founders. We couldn't, because people thought, well, yeah, this is amazing. Oh, we need it so much in the industry. You count on me. Yeah, let's do it. And then we brought amazing startups from female founders, solutions. Well, and some of us invested in individually in the startups because we didn't have much people to create the group.
Got it.
Because when it comes to the time, okay, let's do it. People are also afraid of being too, how can I say, too girly thing, you know, oh, femme thing, female stuff. So they, women and men, okay, they are afraid of being associated with this movement, or, you know, this is kind of tricky. So sometimes I think that, no, we should have something only dedicated to female founders because we need to make this point. And sometimes I think that, no, let's do that in another way under the radar, not talking about this explicitly, because this brings a lot of prejudice against those female founders, so it might not be helping them in the end.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you're talking about is exposure here, right? Sorry to interrupt, but you know, let's be very kind of direct, right? Like there are a ton of female founders that have built either tech or products within the period tech space, right? Like so to help with menstrual cycles, whether that's tracking, whether that's period pants, whatever it might be, right? Now for a lot of male investors, that's going to be, you know, that's not a subject that I
don't even know about it.
I don't know, you know, I haven't experienced it.
I don't know how to exactly.
So I don't know how to approach it. I mean, I have a wife and two daughters, so I'm fairly comfortable in my skin around that. And actually, interestingly, I think there are also, it also comes down to cultural kind of expectations, right? So my wife is Italian. And in Italy, like people talk about their bodies in a very healthy way, right? Like there isn't that same stigma around a lot of this stuff. But I think to your point, like having a female focused fund, I equally go to and fro on like, what is the, you know, is that valuable? Because I think then you bracket people in and you actually are doing almost a disservice by saying, well, you will only get funded if you are, you know, if you come to a female focused fund. No,
yeah,
you can get funding from anywhere. It's more about educating the broader, you know,
that's the point.
Broader ecosystem.
That's the point.
Yeah.
But you know, I think that the point that you brought is interesting, because we do have some industry, female industry things that, well, male investors, they won't understand, or sometimes they understand, but they don't get the magnitude of the market or how people would pay lots of money to solve their problem.
Why,
you know?
Why is this a problem for them? Yeah, sure.
Yeah, why is this a problem? And why, you know, there will be many women paying good money to solve these problems. They simply don't get it. And okay, but we do have many women in regular industries, you know, like in shipping industry, in cybersecurity, in many others. And then I think it's much more just a matter of, we have so many other startups from male founders that I know exactly how to relate, how to get along, and how to deal with it. So it's easier.
Yeah,
you know?
I think actually this is a really interesting point, right? It's the conflation of female founder versus femtech, right? Like, so female founder is not equal to femtech, right? So to your point,
exactly.
Female founder, I mean, you know, we're working with a female founder who's built cancer discovery tech, right? Working with one in the fashion space, one in the beauty space. We've worked with, you know, founders in pure femtech. You know, a founder I met recently has created a negotiation chatbot. You know, like all sorts of really interesting stuff in broad spectrum. But I think if I'm, and this is, I think, where I see a bit of a problem, right? Which is, as an example, when I go to female founder events, I get approached by female founders, and so many products or so many business ideas seem to be very similar. So, you know, a lot of female founders, for example, that I've met tackling the circular fashion economy. And I just wonder how much of that is how much can you disrupt that? How many new businesses are going to really be able to target that market, right? And obviously, we all build or do what we know or what we love or what we have passion for. I think that there needs to be a broadening of viewpoint across the spectrum. You've got to, to an extent, and, I've had this, let's call it an argument, but I've had this discussion with my daughters and my younger daughter in particular. We were talking about university and degrees, and I made a comment around how, for example, psychology seems to be a degree that a lot of girls, I've noticed, kind of default to because they don't necessarily know what else they want to do. And my daughter, rightly so, just came at me and she said, "But Dad, you are now being part of the problem, because part of the issue here is that women are excluded from scientific fields and therefore feel like they can't, wouldn't necessarily want to do a degree in science because then they aren't necessarily able to find a job." And I was like, "No, that can't be right." And then I looked at the research. And I'm like, "Oh, sugar, yeah, she's pretty right. I mean, it's improved, but it's nowhere where it needs to be." But I think the encouragement of, if you are a female founder, you don't need to solve problems. I mean, obviously you can and should if that's what you want to do, but you don't only have to solve problems that relate, to women. And I think for men, we've got to understand, and men and investors in general, that female founders does not mean that it is only femtech, right? Like, there are incredible female founders building incredible
things.
Yeah, they are
doing many other things. Yeah, they are doing lots of other things, exactly.
Yeah. So listen, I mean, like, the other thing I wanted to kind of touch on is that you transitioned from like a very corporate background, right, to becoming a leading figure within angel investing and core angels, et cetera. So what advice would you give to individuals looking to pursue angel investing either as a career or as, a substantial part of what they do? And I guess, we talked about how core angels support new angels in their journey, but what is the advice that you would give to, anyone thinking about starting today? Because I think, someone, I've written a small number of small checks as an angel, but I'm very exposed to this ecosystem. I'm seeing, typically venture-backed businesses on a daily business basis. And so I see the spread of the potential, right? Now, obviously, as a very small check angel, it's hard for me to get into a lot of those deals. So obviously, I have to go via syndicate or whatever. Although there are a lot of founders that will take small checks these days because they see the value add beyond the check, right? But I think, and you said this earlier, a lot of people don't necessarily even understand that there is an opportunity for them to get in, or they think about angel investing as something that, you only do in restaurants or in like traditional businesses, because that's been the traditional kind of business angel viewpoint. So how do you approach that topic?
Well, first thing is that I see some people that look for me and say, friends or colleagues, and say, "Oh, Cynthia, tell me more about this angel investing thing." And I feel like they expect to have some kind of certificate, and then I can start operating, so you don't need this. So first thing is, there is a lot of content over there. There is a lot of good content, in fact, in many places that you can start learning about it. So I would, I'm writing right now a book about angel investing, explained like very basic stuff about angel investing to support people in this. And I think that look for this kind of content. You have webinars, in Core Angels, we have many open webinars to general audience, not only our community, but also people from outside. Go there, watch what people are talking about, look for references, study, but don't wait to feel like, "Well, now I am prepared, so let's start doing this," because you learn a lot in the process,
Putting the money to work is the best way to learn, right?
Exactly. It's the best way, because then you also have the commitment to learn about it, So once you have made the investment, you will be really eager to learn about that business, that founders, that market, and then you'll be supportive to them. So this is one thing. The other thing is, especially if you're coming from corporate, it's a totally different game, okay? I see many angels that they are executives, they have been, or and they retire, or they are still working. And it's really hard for them to understand the valuation of a startup and how we take a look at the value of a company when it's a startup, because they have been doing the same sort of analysis for, you know, factories, operations that are steady, you know, from decades. And this is totally different. And so I see that sometimes they try to replicate the models in the startup role, that it doesn't work. And also the processes, you know. So I was once having a discussion with an angel that we were talking about a startup that was not going well. And he said, okay, let's just sell it. And I said, but sell what? Because the guys are not doing well. We don't have anything to sell, you know. Whatever we have to sell, it's very poor value. We're not going to make any money out of that. And we cannot say, you know, I'm selling. No, it doesn't work like that, you know. So it's completely different game. And so I think it's important to take a look at, to try to understand how the game works, how it works, how the valuation process works, what is the funding process of startups. But don't wait too long to jump in and start interacting. Go to the event. If you're going to a conference, an innovation conference, don't go there just to watch the speakers. Go there and try to talk to the founders and make questions, make dumb questions. This is how we learn, right? And try to start doing it. And if you're doing this in a model like Core Angels or outside Core Angels in a network, in a syndicate, go there, speak to people, ask what they are doing, how the process is, what are the good practices that they think they are doing, what is working, what is not. And I would advise not to wait too long and just start doing.
Yeah, I mean, I think the other point there, and I think about this a lot because, you know, the first investment I ever made, I probably put in more money than I should have. Not that it was a huge check still even then, but, you know, that one went to zero, and then I've had another one go to zero, and I've got two or three still kind of going, and I think, you know, could do really well. But I think a lot of new angels are like, okay, I'm going to invest in one and see where it goes, and then I'll invest in the next or in the next, right? But actually,
yeah, that's a great point.
You've got to take a portfolio approach. You need to do 10 because you are taking
absolutely
that, especially the early stage, you're taking that bet that, you know, again, you know, of those 10, several are going to die. And the problem is, if you invest in one and it goes south, that potentially, you know, scares you off from doing it again.
And it happens a lot, Arish. You are 100% right, because it's a patience game. You know, it's not something that you're going to invest today and in 2 years you get your money back with the return. You know, no, it's not like this. So if you wait to invest in one, and then when you have exited this one, you invest in another one, man, this is going to last forever, you know? So it's important to build some portfolio or invest in three. And then, you know, it's important. I really like the approach of portfolio, because it reduces your risk, not only theoretically, because you're going to invest in more startups, but also because of the timing thing, you know? If you invest in only one, the chances that you're going to exit with profit and soon are very low. Especially because it's the first one that you're doing, so you will learn a lot. You know, sometimes the first one that you're investing, you're paying to learn. Okay,
yeah.
So maybe you didn't select it well, or there's something that you could do better, whatever. So I totally agree with you. And the most that you can build your portfolio, higher are the chances that you have some success.
Yeah. I mean, I think I 100% agree about the learning aspect. I mean, the first investment taught me about the importance of investing in that you are essentially investing in the founding team, and therefore to do your diligence on them. I think the second one that went to zero, I learned the importance of not kind of FOMOing myself. So just, you know, coming into a round, because lots of people I knew were investing, even though fundamentally in my gut, there was something telling me, no, this isn't something that you should be investing in. By the time I kind of realized that, or kind of paid attention to my gut, it was too late. I think I was in the business for 6 months before it folded. So, I mean, look, I think the core advice is you've got to, of course, learn best practices, figure out, you know, understand the fundamentals of what terms are, you know, what dilution is, what it means. But unless you put the money to work, you won't learn, right? So I think that is the core, you know, the core aspect of this. I have one final question, which I ask kind of all our guests. So what is one thing that you have a contrarian conviction or opinion on from any area of life, whether that's work, politics, socially, or even in your home life? What is the hill that you would die on defending?
Well, the hill I would die defending in is... you know, as you saw, this thing of the opportunity for people is something that really gets me, you know, and I think I've been in the angel investing business because of that, because I see that opportunity is not the same for everyone. And I think this is a great way that we can somehow bring resources to people that could do amazing things, but they would not succeed in the regular, you know, process, in the regular system. So I think it's kind of a way of being a rebel somehow, and putting money in businesses that other people would not believe in, and you are, and they will make it happen. So I'm talking about this not only because I'm a woman and immigrant or whatever, but because I see many people on this thing. My conviction that I have in life is that... And this is awkward to say, because I run a business that is based on community, but I think that we are all alone in the end. We are always alone, and we need to, although we have community, and community is really powerful, we need to be happy before we are happy with people. We need to be happy before we find a good job. We need to be happy before we build a good marriage. We need to build ourselves before anything else, and not depend on a boss, a job, a partner or a family or a business or whatever. So take care of yourself first, and then think of the rest.
I mean, I won't disagree with that at all. I think it's a contrarian opinion for most people, because we're always told, you know, be part of a community and, you know, be socially agile and all the rest of it. But the reality, to your point, right? If you're not happy in yourself, it's very hard to be happy as part of a community. It took me 40 odd years to figure that out. But I did. And and you know,
it takes time to learn. Yeah. Especially those things, you know.
It takes time to learn it. Also, I think it takes that kind of self-awareness and self-reflection.
To be able to get learn about ourselves. It takes a lot of time.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I do love that. I think that's actually probably one of the better answers that we've had on this this particular question. Yeah, because I mean, because you know, just you know, we're told that it's unhealthy to be alone, right? Like, we're told that you know, you need people around. And you do. I mean, absolutely, you need to have that kind of Brownian motion of being with other people. But if you're not comfortable being alone, and I think this is the point, right? If you aren't comfortable in your own skin, how can you truly be comfortable anywhere else, right? Like, that's precisely what I mean.
And I think that it's really easy to expect happiness coming from the others, you know, like, yes, I'll be happy when
I've written about
I will be happy when I achieve this. Happiness is much more simple than that.
I've written about, I can't tell you how many, it's lovely to have this conversation. I've written about this like a ton. And the way I phrase it is, happiness is not an objective that you achieve. It is a state of being that you are, right? So you can never reach happiness. You can only ever be happy. And I think the problem we have in today's world is that too many people are chasing happiness, as you say, from an external perspective. Whereas if you look, and this is, you know, and maybe this is the Eastern kind of Indian part of me coming through, and it's a very sort of Buddhist, Jain, Hindu kind of philosophy type of thing. But, you know, in all of those sort of practices, they talk about how, you know, the root of sorrow is attachment to material and physical things. And actually, if you can get down to your core and realize that, okay, you know, this laptop or this iPad or whatever in front of me is is actually not what makes me happy, but the conversation I'm having with you is what makes me happy, or just actually being able to sit here and appreciate that, you know, I'm in the world and I'm living. You know, I think the world would be a much happier place, and I think we'd see a lot fewer problems out there. Cynthia,
yeah, things are just means. Yeah, perfect.
It's been absolutely wonderful having you on the podcast. For the audience, where can they find you online? Are you on LinkedIn? Are you on Twitter? Where can they look for you online?
Yeah, they can look for me at LinkedIn. I'm there, LinkedIn Cynthia Mano. And Core Angels website also. You can find lots of things about angel investing there.
Amazing. I want to thank you so much for joining me. I mean, you're sitting in Brazil. I can only imagine how much better the weather is out there than it is here in the UK. Although it's a pretty nice day today as well. But thank you so much for joining me. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you, Arish. It was a pleasure. Thank you. I've learned a lot too. Thank you. Bye-bye.